Okay. You guys come out into the illegal factory. There are goons stationed everywhere with assault rifles. They're manufacturing dirty bombs, and there's piles and piles of illicit arms. And standing above it all on a catwalk above you is a man dressed as a general. And he cackles madly.
Okay, I shoot him.
All right, well, first, you know, you're going to have to fight your way through about a dozen armed guards and, you know, a few sentry turrets.
Well, that's fine. I shoot all them first.
Well, that's not the way it works, Will. You have to...
What, I shot him?
Well, he said that he shoots them, so if he shoots them first, yeah, then he shoots the general, then they're dead.
Exactly.
But we have to roll for initiative, and then we have to...
Well, I just shot him.
Well, I want to see where Will's going with this. Okay, so you shoot them, then what do you do?
Well, I kill them, of course.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, naturally.
Okay, so it was a success, so you don't need to roll.
They're all dead. Yeah, awesome. I'm not going to loot their bodies.
All right, what do you find?
I find money, ammunition, awesome weapons.
Yeah, Ryan, let them work.
What kind of awesome keycards? Weapons? Keycards?
But okay. I know what they have on them.
Yeah, but Will, what do you
find? No, you're not the one looting their bodies, Will. Yeah. So Will.
Oh, I found an RPG. What's an RPG?
I'll take that one.
Oh, okay, here you go, Meyer.
I think the general, maybe the general has the names and addresses of
check.
All the...
there's a book.
Okay, these are all the bad guys, so... Right. Are there launch codes so we can launch missiles at these bad guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. All right, so I'll just punch those into my computer here, and that should money. Do it.
All right, awesome.
All right, so game over.
Who wants to get a burger?
Yeah, sure.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Let's go to the diner.
All right. Good game, Ryan.
I hate you guys.
Welcome to Ragnarok, your home of the Nerdpocalypse.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Ragnarok.
Yay!
You lucky sons of bitches.
Yeah.
This is episode 28, Role-Playing Tips and Tricks, or Attack of the Murderers.
Ugh.
So angry and specific in what they want.
Yeah, they want you know what they're all about.
Murdering.
They just come right out and say it.
Yeah. But I have to say, I do appreciate their monogrammed polo shirts.
Mm. Plus, you got to admit, you got to respect them for being straight up, straightforward.
Yeah, like when I see those people with the black polo shirts with the red writing that says the murderers on it.
Mm-hmm. You know what they're about?
I know to get out of the way. And if I don't, I know what's going
to
happen.
You know what really freaks me out about them? They're always like caked to the elbows in blood, but their clothing is so clean.
Yeah.
Where do they get their laundry?
You know what it is? I saw them working once. They have like big rubber smocks they wear over their clothes.
Ah.
But like they only go down to their elbows.
Oh.
Which is why.
Right. That would do it.
Yeah.
I see. Well, anyway, before we all get murdered, let's go ahead and introduce ourselves. I'm Ryan.
I'm Eric.
I'm Ed.
I'm Meyer.
And I'm Alex.
So this week, we're going to talk a little bit about role-playing. Since our actual play games have been getting a lot of big response on the internet, we figured we'd sort of let you all take a peek under the hood and see what a role-playing game with us is all about.
Because apparently kind of, we're pros.
Yeah, we're kind of experts.
We'll impart our wisdom upon you.
We're sort of a big deal.
We've logged lots of man hours into role-playing
Maybe
games.
Maybe we're journeymen.
I feel like if we were, like, practicing flying instead of role-playing, we'd be, like, helicopter pilots.
Okay.
Mm.
So just think of us as the helicopter pilots of role-playing.
I'm a level 30 role-player, multitasking in bard.
I'm a level 30 helicopter pilot.
Multitasking in bard?
Mostly flying and passenger transportation.
You can't even touch my loot skills.
You can't even touch my rotating blades, otherwise you'll die.
That's a good point. I'm not going to.
Well, maybe not die, just lose a couple of limbs.
Oh, no. These are my rotating
They're
blades.
They're poisoned.
They're Vorpal.
Anyhow.
Vorpal helicopter blades.
Those of you who have been listening for a while know, we've already done sort of a GMing episode 7. So this time we thought we'd take a look at what goes on the other side of the screen, playing and making characters and... You know, basically having fun during a game.
I'd also like to say plus 2 points to Ryan for background research.
Yeah.
I didn't remember there was episode 7.
Well, I remember there was episode 7.
Right.
I had to
skip that number.
As the guy who had to cut together every single fucking episode of this podcast, I can probably tell you what each one
was. Oh, you know what episode was really good?
What?
Was episode 8 was the one that we were really
No, Eric with? Ruined it.
Yeah, oh,
that
yeah.
That was our debate about the best apocalypse.
Oh, right.
It was supposed to be awesome.
Wait, how did I ruin that?
I don't remember.
Oh, yeah, I remember you ruined it somehow.
What?
Ryan?
Eric ruins everything.
No,
I'm just going to go with that blanket statement.
All right, fair enough.
I'm going to listen to episode 8 when I get home.
He ruined this episode, too.
Fuck you.
So before Eric ruins this episode, let's get on with our discussion.
I'm going to break the microphone!
Okay.
Oh, crap.
That was my breaking the microphone sound, apparently.
At least we got that over with.
Yeah.
Now that we've gotten it over with, we thought we'd start off with talking a little bit about character generation. So what do you guys think? What goes into making an interesting character?
You need a pencil.
Mm. Often dots.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on the game.
A sheet of paper. Numbers. Usually a character sheet.
Oh, I started with dots.
Maybe dice.
Right.
Depending on whether or not you need to roll.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the next topic.
Yeah. All right.
Unless you were being less specific and more general about, like, the creative...
Yes, that's what I meant.
Okay.
How do you make a character that is not just stats, something that you can get behind and actually role play?
Funny thing, you still need a pencil for that, though.
That's true. Everything that we've said is true.
Or pen.
Or unless you're using a computer program.
Everything we've said has been snarky but true.
What if you play over the internet?
Well, then, like you should still have a pencil handy just in case.
Right.
Maybe for personal note-taking. But anyway, for me, it all comes down to characterization. Like, before I even start laying out my stats, usually, I like to figure out what kind of character I want to play. And then, like, if it's something with Call of Cthulhu, where you have to roll up, you know, your stats and assign them to your major attributes, then... Once I know what kind of character I want to play, then I'll assign my attributes. Like, if I want to be playing a smart character, I'm going to give him a higher intelligence. But if I want him to be, you know, a combat character, well, then I'll give him, you know, strength or... I don't remember what all the attributes for COC are, but something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you sort of think of what function the character is going to serve in the game, like in the party.
Right, yeah.
Well, generally, it's a good idea to get a handle on what other people are playing, you know.
As well.
You don't need two tanks, generally speaking, you know. Or two doctors.
Two healers.
That's probably...
In Call of Cthulhu, you do.
Oh.
Because people tend to die a lot.
Really, all you need in Call of Cthulhu is an excuse to have a lot of dynamite.
Yeah.
That's true, too.
See, I like trying to come up with, like, quirks for my characters. Like, if I'm adding a flaw or a merit or something, I usually don't want to add a flaw just for saying I get these points. I want to actually try to work the flaw into my character and make them more than just, you know, hey, I'm this guy, I'm here with you, and I'm helping you, and make them into at least somewhat interesting and relatable character.
Right.
I mean, I don't always succeed at that, but... That's what my aim usually is.
I usually
start off with something similar to that, Eric. If it's a flaw in my character's persona, you know, it's something that he can work on during the course of the game, or it could be a problem he has to solve or a goal that he has. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, some kind of a motivation. I like to look for motivation, especially, you know, for a long campaign, something to keep me involved in the character and in the events.
Yeah, motivation is good. I also usually like to start with like an archetype or a general idea for what I want my character to be. Like the other day, I thought it would be fun to play a Vegas showroom singer.
Okay.
And then I'm like, so I came up with like, that would be fun. I want to be a Vegas showroom singer. Well, then, who is this guy? You know, why is he a Vegas showroom singer? If it's 1950, okay, it makes sense why he's a Vegas showroom singer, because everyone loves to be a Vegas showroom singer. But if it's, you know, 2012, that's a really unique profession. So why is this guy a Vegas showroom singer? And then start to build around that, and then come up with a backstory for him. Or maybe he owns his own club, or he's down on hard times. You know, he used to be really famous, and now he's down on hard times.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to come up with a backstory for my character, which then infers their motivation and
why they're doing whatever it is
that's happening. Yeah,
because anybody can just say, you know, I'm a Vegas show singer, or I'm a Russian general, or I'm a, you know,
I'm leader of the Happy Church.
Yeah, I'm a soldier, but you know. I'm a soldier who lost his entire fleet at a cruise.
Platoon?
Yeah.
Fleet is ocean.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
That's why I got confused for a second.
My entire squad, whatever. Fleet.
Those of you who are paying attention can tell Ed is not in the military.
I am not in the military.
I'm a soldier and lost my entire fleet at the basketball hoop game.
Unless you're tired.
Ed's also not an athlete.
Unless you're a ship.
Maybe I am a ship. Maybe one of my characters is a sentient ship. That would be an interesting character.
Also teetering on the ridiculous, though.
Well, I asked Ryan to be a sentient turkey the other day, and he said no.
I guess it would depend on the game you were playing.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's something also that you should also consider, the setting that your GM is working with, mm-hmm. and what will work well in that setting.
Yeah.
Well, for example, Chuck tends to run, I don't necessarily want to say campier games, but his games are less dark, and they're more on the, you know, lighter, fun side than a game that Ryan runs. Ryan's games tend to...
are not fun!
My games are emotionally abusive.
Yes.
I always go and cut myself after playing one of Ryan's.
Well, not that they're not fun, but they are darker, and they tend to have heavier storylines. So, you know, when I make characters for Chuck's game, I it's not that I put less into it, but they're more caricatures and more archetype-y a little bit.
I have to say, Ed, every character you play is a character.
Yes, but they have backstory.
You're playing a talking crow in my game, in my Eclipse Phase game. Well, not the fact that you're a crow is what's so character, but he's just such a weird character. All your characters are weird.
Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not complex.
That's true. I'm not saying he's not complex.
A caricature, saying that he's a caricature is saying he's not complex.
That's true.
A caricature means that they're just sort of a bombastic, you know, showy...
Well, I would say a caricature is more of a character that has one or two prominent traits,
right.
and is less rounded,
exactly.
less three-dimensional. Mm-hmm.
You know, so...
You know, like, if you're playing the guy with the funny voice, and that's his whole thing, he's got a funny voice,
right.
that's, you know, that's a caricature.
And, you know, I
want to make a guy.
We've all played caricatures in our time, and sometimes yeah. that's fun, sometimes that's fine. Sometimes, you know, I would say in Children of the Setting Sun, which was a very dark game that Ryan ran, playing a caricature wouldn't really work.
Says the guy who first rolled up his character as General Borshevsky.
Like I said, well, that was much earlier.
That was Ed, before Ed knew that my games were emotionally abusive yes. and draining.
And to be fair, General Borshevsky did have a lot of backstory.
Yes.
And
but his name was General.
Well, speaking of that, I wanted to kind of point out, I've noticed it most in Ed and Alex. Every player has a different style of what they need to get into a character. When Ed handed me General Borshevsky for the first time, he handed me 3 pages of handwritten backstory that he'd come up with for this character about how he was the commander of a Russian base in the Arctic.
A fleet?
Was it a fleet?
No.
I thought it was
he
a
had
base.
Lots of fleets
and there was,
ships marching
there was
around.
There was some kind of disaster, and he had to destroy the base and all of his troops, and then he defected to the U.S., and this took place during the Cold War, so it was... You know, it was all very intense. And Alex just, you know, he came to the table with Steve O'Reilly, who was, this is what we were playing, Mage the Ascension, second yep. edition. Steve O'Reilly was a virtual adept, and that was pretty much, he was a happy-go-lucky virtual adept.
Yeah.
And that was it.
He was also like the second character I rolled up.
He was happy-go-lucky.
Like, that was like freshman year of high school. Yeah.
But
how long did he remain happy-go-lucky? It wasn't too long.
Until we got sent back in time. And I wound up in that room full of corpses.
Yeah, that was bad.
But yeah. Ed came to the table knowing all of this stuff about his character, and Alex found out who his character
yes.
was
yeah.
throughout the game. And I feel like, you know, you can do either of those things, or you can strike a balance, or you can have a style that doesn't include any of those.
Well, because both of them lead to a story. General Borshevsky's story was tying up his past and finishing loose ends and finishing his story. Alex's Steve O'Reilly's story was discovering himself.
Yeah. Well, I remember Steve's backstory was that he was on the run from the Men in Black because they found him, or his friend got killed so long ago.
Right.
I think his friend got killed and maybe he got framed for it.
Mm-hmm. We were all on the run. That was the
yeah.
like the
and that was
the
so he was
crux
so he was on the run
game.
From the Men in Black, which are the technocracy and
yeah.
the Mage the Ascension, and that was. Pretty much his backstory. He was also like 20, so
mm-hmm.
he wasn't old enough to have too much of a backstory.
Well, and I've noticed that, you know, different character types appeal to different people. Like Meyer, for instance, he started off playing a character who... Meyer, would you like to introduce your character again?
You mean one Rivero, Jose Estrada.
The Death Rider.
It's one of his titles.
Meyer played this character, and every prominent NPC or minor NPC or anyone that Ed was playing or anyone at the table that he interacted with, he would introduce himself. Yeah. And he was just this very, you know, flamboyant, over-the-top kind of a character. Meyer also played in my children game Todd Grundy, who is
a dwarven miner
in 1960s America.
Not dwarf as I mean, it was kind of like Gimli, but he was just a small person.
He was a little person.
Yeah,
I have to say, I've noticed Meyer tends to give his characters like one affectation or like really big characteristic that then everything else seems to revolve around. Like Juan introducing himself to everyone was just sort of the main presentation of him being really friendly and sort of trusting of everyone.
Yeah.
And Todd Grundy was a miner. He didn't talk.
But he had an axe.
Yes.
He had a pickaxe.
Meyer's characters also tend to, for better or for worse, push the plot in forward. A direction.
Yeah.
Not necessarily forward.
Sometimes sideways.
But in a direction.
They make things happen.
Yes, absolutely.
And I was going to ask you, Meyer, because then later I decided to run a second Chronicle, and Meyer created a character who actually, like, arced. He had a whole story progression. So, Meyer, from your perspective, you know, what changed between, you know, making these very...
I think what changed was in the game was that I always had, when I first started out, I didn't really know how to play, and I was learning. Yeah. And, you know, I can always lean on Ed and Alex to, you know, lead the game. And in the other game, Ed and Alex weren't around, so I had to have a character who was strong and actually could, you know, wasn't, you know, Juan or Jose Estrada, who was almost dying in every other game.
It was that time you stood in front of the RPG.
Well, that's the time.
There was a period of, I would say, about 5-6 games where Juan Rivera, Jose Estrada, nearly, like literally, was like one, you know, spit away from dying until he finally did die because he got hit.
He stood in front of a rocket.
Yes.
He was very trusting of the rocket.
I think you were mauled by pirates. Mm. A water tower was dropped on you.
Yeah. Will was on top of that one.
Will was standing on top of the water tower, and it fell on you.
And I was drowned.
I'm just picturing such a Bugs Bunny moment.
So not only,
he comes up and he's the accordion.
Not only was he crushed by the water tower, but the water was gushing out on him.
And Yakko, Wakko, and Dot went.
Yes. So that almost killed him.
Yeah, and what were you going to say, Meyer?
But yeah, that's when, you know, when they were gone, I had to actually pull my weight, so to speak, and that was the character, Peter Petrelli from Heroes, even though I didn't...
You stole his name, but not his character.
Not his character at all.
He was really the character that I actually became a strong role player, I would say.
Yeah, like learned how to play.
Yeah.
And I noticed Eric usually makes sort of silly characters.
I guess a little.
Not silly. Lighthearted?
Yeah, I lean more towards that.
His characters usually are the...
They tend to be the
humanity.
Yeah, the voice of reason in an otherwise... Cause if you guys...
Well, especially in City of the Damned, when everyone...
Karen, yeah.
Everyone was selling their souls, and I was trying to kill Will and destroy his family, and he's losing his faith.
And I was a demon.
And you were a demon.
And a jerk.
Just to give you all some context, this is a chronicle that I ran a couple of years ago that was about infernalism. It was a Mage Second Ed chronicle.
Yeah.
And as Ed said, everybody was, you know, getting into selling their souls to demons.
I didn't have a soul to begin with.
You were a demon.
Yes. But in Eric's character in that game didn't sell her soul and sort of became a mirror to everyone else, like the voice of reason. Like, Ed Meyer's character sold his soul for crazy demon powers and wound up becoming a thrall. And
I had my reasons.
No, you did. I'm not saying you were wrong. Mm. But that's what you did, and that's what most of the other characters did.
Right.
And Eric didn't, and it sort of became, you know, because his character wouldn't do that. And I have to give you a lot of credit, Eric. You always play your character, though.
Mm. Yes.
Like,
thank you.
Your character wouldn't do that, so you didn't.
Will didn't sell his power either.
It was hard, though.
No, Will didn't.
It was hard, because everyone else was going out and doing all this powerful stuff.
Crazy.
And I was just kind of like, hey, I could build something or make some art.
Yeah.
I mean, by the end, I had a robot suit. But
that's true. I think you, in the end of the game, I believe you were one of the turning points in the battle.
Yep.
Because I remember I entered, and no one knew what side she was going to take.
Right.
Right. That was a big PvP battle, which actually is a great segue for the next part of this talk.
Yes, we want to talk a little about, once you have the characters, you know, how do you fit them into the party? How do you interact with your fellow players? You know, how do you keep the game interesting while still engaging in the GM's plot?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of this sort of falls 50-50 between the characters and the GM for this one, because the GM has to give the players a reason to work together.
Right.
And the players also have to have enough sense. If everyone's starting out creating characters, excuse me, you shouldn't be creating characters who are always going to be at odds with each other. Kirschenmeier.
But even so, it does sometimes make for interesting elements.
Yes.
But sometimes it doesn't work, like when we test played D&D. And
right.
Meyer and I were sort of, you know,
friendly rivals,
and you were, you know, just a crook, but Eric and Derek, I believe, were, you know, crusading healers.
They were both clerics.
The three of us were
Eric
off.
Eric and Derek, the clerics.
Yes.
We're great.
The three of us were off looting and pillaging and slaughtering innocents.
And Eric and Derek were like, but mission that way, another direction.
Derek and Eric, in order to further the plot, had to just sort of play against their characters, because in all fairness, they should have turned around and said, I'm going to smite you for what you're doing. They should have.
Yeah.
There wasn't any kind of unifying motive.
Yeah. But we wouldn't have gotten anywhere.
Right. So, but yeah, it does make for interesting points, but what you said is right. There has to be a balance. Like, if you have two characters in the party who like to bicker, but then when it comes down, or not like to bicker, but do bicker, but then when it comes down to it, they work together.
Well, O'Reilly and Borshevsky were a lot like
They were that. Bicker. They would bicker a lot. But then when push came to shove, no, that stuff didn't matter, right. And they would work together to get done whatever they had to get
they
done.
They didn't like each other, necessarily, but they cared about each other.
By the end, yeah.
Yeah.
But if you have two characters who bicker all the time, and then still won't even work together, then, which is one of the problems we had in the City of the Damned campaign,
right.
Is that everyone got so opposed to each other that we had entire games where it was just PvP combat.
Well, Chris tends to make abrasive characters.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, if you're listening, we're sorry, but your characters are assholes.
He knows it.
He'll admit it. Yeah.
He does.
Well, I've noticed that it's one extreme or the other with him. Either his character is an abrasive asshole who is a horrible person that everybody hates, or he's just sort of a, you know, milquetoast nice guy.
Yeah, he's either, for my game, he has Damien, the uplifted pig who sleeves himself into a human and then sells other people into slavery.
For those of you who know our APs, exactly.
Yes, and then in one of Ryan's old games, he played Bob Watt.
Who was just, like, you know, an insufferable nerd.
Didn't he spend 2 years studying a teacup?
Yes.
wrote Chris,
a treaty on it.
There are times when Chris's characters are just super friendly. And then there are times when they're just abrasive and terrible. Chris's characters also tend to have... Chris's characters tend to, like Myers, move the plot in a direction, whether it's forwards, backwards, or sideways. In any situation. I mean, think about the No Way Squad characters that Chris has created in the original iteation of the No Way Squad.
Oh, come on. Okay, I don't think you can hold No Way Squad characters against anyone.
No.
But, no, I'm not holding this against him. In the original iteration of the No Way Squad, Chris's character, Zhao, was a bum
who would be passed out drunk the entire game, and then whenever, like, we were in a diplomatic situation, would wake up, scream, "There he is," fire off a couple of rounds from his revolver.
Miss. No. All the rounds.
All the rounds from his revolver. And then combat would start. So it was one of those things where when you were going into a situation, if you brought Zhao, there would be a fight.
Well, if you brought Meyer, there would be a fight too, because Meyer was playing the brain.
Yes.
And his two options were to try to, say, take over your mind with his with his psychic powers, and if that didn't work, he would vaporize you with his laser gun.
That
was pretty much it.
One time, one time he summoned a bad guy's mom.
Yes.
the spirit of the villain's mom.
Villain's dead mother.
And then he also used his mind abilities to beat that same villain a little while later in Rock Paper Scissors.
That's true.
Yeah, right.
But
he was gonna throw.
But on a more
No Way Squad games.
On a more serious note. There are examples, in particularly in City of the Damned, of this working and not working.
Right.
See, I think player versus player. I think player versus player is, and it only works if it's in the context of the game
and in game, and not like,
and
you can't,
you don't let it get out of,
which we'll get to.
And also if it, you know, if it contributes to the story,
right?
Like Paul, he would use like out of game knowledge and just screw everyone else, and it was like, why are you doing this?
And Paul has been getting better with that.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, I'm using an example of
how he would, if he saw something that happened in another scene that his character wasn't in, he would try to use it to his advantage, even though to rights his character wouldn't have known about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you know, if you use actually in the concept of the game as like, you know, your character driven, like, all right, if this, this is what my character would do, then you'd use it, and no one would, you know, be mad.
Right.
But we were getting mad at Paul because he wasn't. He was...
Right.
Yeah. What is it? There was the one scene, it was the Infernalism game that I mentioned before that we've been talking about. Meyer had just sold his soul for demon powers, and he needed to commit a ritualistic murder in order to fuel his demon power.
Mm-hmm.
So Meyer, like, you know, it was kind of a very tense scene for him, because it was the first time his character had ever done something this horrible.
Yeah.
And he lured a guy in from the street, you know, I think it was a hobo, with promises of like food or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then he murdered him in a horrible altar and had to, you know, dedicate his blood sacrifice to his demon patron. And, you know, Paul had nothing to do with this scene. Really, his character should not even have been there. And he said, well, you know, my character wants to get in on this. And he stuck his head into the, I think it was just like a side room or something that you had reserved, or
maybe in a hotel room.
Yeah. The demons ran a hotel that we were using as a home base. So it does make sense.
It sounds a lot more lame than it really is.
It really worked.
Yeah.
I think you guys are giving me too much credit.
But and this was before that show with Terry O'Quinn.
Anyhow, Paul decided that his character wanted to know about this, so he knocked on the door and Meyer wouldn't answer, and he like picked the lock and took a picture of Meyer committing this ritual murder with his cell phone, and then tried to blackmail Meyer's character with it. And first of all, this pissed Meyer off to no end, and the rest of us were just kind of like, okay, well, what, you know, why?
Yeah.
You know, what motivation does your character have to have for this? What reason does, you know?
Yeah. And that goes back to what I'm talking about. Like, if your character has motivation,
right,
like, if you make it clear that your character has a motivation, like, let's go back to that example we just talked about with Paul. Like, if we knew for some reason that Paul was a plant from some other organization.
I thought men like you are usually called a fruit.
And thank you, Ed, for the Clue reference. And he was trying to get evidence against us. That would make sense then. Then he would want to be tailing Meyer and find out what's going on and get proof that he's doing bad things.
Well, and
then that's character motivation. Mm-hmm. And then you can't be mad at him for it because he's playing his character.
Right. And that might have actually worked for him, because Paul's character backstory was that he was a New York City detective. He was a cop. So if he had, instead of like taking a surreptitious photograph of Meyer with his cell phone, if he had arrested Meyer instead, you know, or you know, said that's terrible. I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna bring you down for this.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
This is a terrible vacation.
That would have made much more sense. But, yeah. You know, it doesn't mm-hmm. it doesn't make sense that a straight-laced New York City detective is going to go, you know, snapping photographs of
right.
of people yeah. committing murders and then using them to blackmail them right. later on.
So I think what we're saying is that PvP, you know, player versus player, combat or just, you know, antagonism can work. So long as it's within the confines of oh, yeah. the character, uh-huh. and you mm. don't let it derail the entire plot.
Right.
Like, if you wind up spending an entire game that's just players fighting each other and, like, not forwarding the plot at all, that's bad.
Well, if we look at the Eclipse Phase games that Alex runs, everybody has words with Chris, with Damien. And when Doc Skelax was picking through the bodies, there was some conflict, and there's always, you know, there's conflict there, but we still
right.
We still complete or completely fail our mission, right. one or the other.
Right. Like you shouldn't if that's against your character, you should. I mean, it's okay to mention it. Like if Meyer finds, you know, Chris trying to sell people into slavery morally reprehensible.
For some reason.
Yeah. I don't know why. That's kind of weird, but he does. Mm. So he brings it up, which is fine.
Right.
But if he spent the entire game trying to stop Chris from doing that, that would be bad. But also, if he just completely ignored it and just didn't mention it at all,
uh-huh.
that also wouldn't work because that goes against his character, who is against this.
But that goes back to something that I think is important in character creation for the GM to know and for the characters to know is that if one of my characters was a former slave and so vehemently against slavery that seeing Chris do that would cause me to try to kill him, that could cause issues. So when you're creating your characters and you're bringing them into a set situation, and when the GM is setting up the situation, you want to be aware of things like that.
Yeah.
If you have a character who's a slaver and a character who is an escaped slave, that should set alarm bells. Yeah, you know, right. that should be like, oh, that's not such a great idea. Let's talk about this.
Even, you know, if you want to roleplay that conflict out, I think that would be fascinating yeah. to do.
Right.
But you just have to make sure that you drive it forward in a positive way for the players.
That has to become part of the plot.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Otherwise it's going to get in the way of trying to save the, you know, the space right. elevator.
Well, and as a GM, I would say you'd really have two options with that. You either work that into the story.
Right.
And maybe that's one of the first things you do is you resolve that conflict.
Absolutely.
You set up something so that either your slaver is going to renounce his ways or the slave is going to somehow understand what the slaver's doing.
Right.
Or they have to resolve that conflict somehow.
The escaped slave will become the slaver's slave.
or
they have a gun battle and kill each other. As long right. as, I mean, yeah. I feel like as long as the players are cool with playing that out,
right.
you know, and they understand that it's just a game and, you know, if I shoot your character because we uh-huh. have a moral disagreement that I'm, you know, we're diametrically opposed, you know, and that's just our characters and the conflict
right.
is not between us.
Yeah.
But that has to be the game. It can't
right.
be on the way to saving the space elevator.
Oh, I'm going right. to shoot him now.
I'm going to shoot him now.
Right. Yeah.
Which is actually that sort of happened.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I would say is that also just for the GMs, don't be afraid to say no.
Yeah.
Like if you're when we were first rolling up characters for the Eclipse Phase game, Chris wanted to play an uplifted elephant.
Mm-hmm.
I said no, mm-hmm. like you can't do that.
Right.
Well,
it wouldn't work.
And one thing that I would say is really important is to even though we all want to say come into my, you know, let's go in the back and let's do a scene together because, you know, I don't want anybody to know what I'm telling you. Keeping that to a minimum, I think we've discovered, is important.
Is
yeah.
yeah.
Because
yeah.
even though keeping a player out of the loop can bring the drama up and can make it seem more realistic, it can cause paranoia and it can cause, well, what are they talking about? And it can cause conflicts and tensions. There was a while for Ryan's Infernalism game where he had like 10 notes in front of him because we all had our own agendas.
Right. And every couple of minutes, we had someone had to go to the back.
It was pretty constant for a while.
First off, it made the games longer. And secondly, it just made everybody suspect everybody, and it affected gameplay. Yeah. It made things a little more tense. And there was the incident with Paul where you guys didn't tell Ryan what you were planning to do.
Right. And then Meyer and I killed him.
And then Meyer and Alex killed Paul.
Right.
Yeah.
And you sprung it on me.
Right.
But yep. If we had been laying our cards on the table, you know, with everybody.
I'm sorry, I was on backtrack. We killed Paul's character.
Right.
Yeah, no, we didn't actually kill
Paul's character. Paul's
we did not just. Alex did not just confess to a murder.
No.
He's not. Maybe he is one of the murderers.
To be fair, the character had to die. He had it coming.
Oh, he had it coming.
But.
Well, my point is, if we had been laying our cards on the table the whole time, I could have worked that game into the plot.
Exactly.
Where you guys had that conflict instead of just, oh, hey, I spent 5 hours writing up session notes for this game, and in the first 15 minutes, you guys double-teamed him with a shotgun, and now I have to deal with the fallout of this.
So, you know, secrets can be okay if they're kept to a minimum, but keeping secrets from the GM doesn't work.
Yeah, no, you can't do that.
Well, now that we've talked a little bit about, as players, how do you avoid infighting, how do you, as a player, drive the plot forward?
Infighting.
Well, there's a lot of ways to do it. Infighting is one of them. Sometimes the plot gets driven forward by accident.
Yeah.
Like the game that I ran where Alex was trying to bind...
He was trying to exercise.
No, you were trying to do the cheese whiz out of the pores thing, too.
Cheese whiz out of the pores?
What? It's a spirit effect.
Yeah.
Release the Mad Howlers.
You were trying to release the Mad Howlers.
How did you get Cheese Whiz out of the pores?
You know, release the Mad Howlers, Cheese Whiz that's out of the pores.
Yeah, I think that's actually how they describe the rote
in the book.
Basically, you take like a free roaming spirit and you bind it into the person, and it literally tries to force its way out of them because it doesn't want to be there. And that's the way they describe how it feels for the person in the book. It's like, you know, you're exuding cheese whiz through your pores because...
So Alex was trying to release the Mad Howlers on this villain while they were on a ship, a boat. It was a pirate ship.
Yeah.
And he, like, triple or quadruple botched
really
or something.
Bad.
And ended up binding the guy's spirit to the boat that they were on.
It was just after everyone else had killed him, too.
Right.
So they just killed him, and then I accidentally bound his spirit to the boat. So then the boat started attacking everyone.
So
my character just sat back down and started performing an exorcism.
This simple there-and-back-again plot that I had really became something else.
You're welcome, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, and you can, as a player, advance the plot by doing something interesting or contrary... But not all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Another good example, there is a game that Chuck ran when we were in high school. He had stolen this from Neil Gaiman's Sandman series. They were in the Dreaming, and some NPC told them that they had to stick to this one path and not to stray from the path. And Paul, just to be contrary, walked off of the path and created his nemesis, his character's, you know, arch enemy and complete opposite who wanted to kill him and take his life. And I'm sure Chuck put that in there thinking, Paul's going to do this. But it drove the plot forward for, you know, a lot of sessions afterwards because there was this whole new character with a different agenda who was trying to murder Paul and take his existence.
I think as a party, too, you don't always necessarily nominate them, but I think every group has... their leader. And this is the person, because the GM is always going to dangle bait in front of you to make you take their plot.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, I'll say, if they're, you know, usually they're not just going to tell you, I mean, sometimes it will, but it's usually something a little more complex than just go here and kill this guy.
Right.
That's pretty straightforward. But it might be, oh, you've heard a rumor that this guy is hanging out in this area. And then it's usually up to the players what they want to do with that. So you allow them some dicking around, but eventually there's usually someone in the group who will say, okay, guys, we need to go take care of this.
Exactly.
And it really helps to have that person in your party, but as the GM too, you have to make sure that the incentive is enough for your players to do whatever it is you want them to do.
Right, to participate and have fun.
Well, one of the important things when playing, I mean, most characters are, to a degree, investigators.
Yeah.
No matter what system or what game you're playing, your characters are trying to complete a certain task. So, investigating and listening. Listening to what the GM says and observing your surroundings, you know. Anytime you walk into a room, you make an observation check. Even if it's, you don't find anything. Those are important because anything can mean anything.
Ed smoked an entire joint before we started.
I did.
Anything could mean anything.
It's like anything could, like, mean anything.
Whoa. But yeah, I do know exactly what you mean. You know, you have to pay attention for those clues.
Uh-huh.
I always like it when people bother to remember the names of my prominent NPCs. You know, because I spent all the time and trouble to come up with this story, and you know, I'm going to call so and so, and you know, or what's his face, and you know, talk to him.
Sorry,
yeah.
I could never remember NPC names.
And one thing, honestly, that's really important is, and this is just a practical thing, is to be consistent with your
character.
Gaming that, but also being consistent with your gaming schedule, somewhat consistent, because. Some games, like your City of the Damned game and your Children of the Setting Sun game and my Altas game, we would go months at a time sometimes
without playing. Yeah.
And then we'd come back and we'd be foggy and there would be a catch-up game, you know, especially with Children of the Setting Sun. Where
we'd
get
back into it.
And sometimes we would just have to sort of make up what happened because we wouldn't remember.
Like, who was that guy?
Right.
Why did we want to say
City was pretty consistent. We played at least once a month, probably.
Yeah.
City was better.
For a long time, but there were times at the end where there was, like, big gaps.
Yeah,
sure. It wasn't as bad as Children of the Setting Sun.
It was a big party.
There's a lot where you were doing, like, a game a week, and, like, it was always the day I couldn't be there.
So that's just a practical thing. Keeping your parties relatively manageable also is important.
Yeah.
City of the Damned was huge.
The problem that we had with that game was that we had 8 or 9 players at one time.
Yeah.
I think 9 was
us plus Chris, James, Paul, Will.
That's 8, yeah. I mean, I would say the ideal party size is 4 to 5. I have 7 in my Eclipse Phase game right now, and that's a lot. But that's what I don't wait for everyone to be ready to run a game,
yeah. Right?
And because
you just can't, because then you'll never be able to get everyone.
Well, the reason that we're waiting a lot towards the end is because we knew we only had like 2 or 3 sessions left, and everybody wanted to be there for the big finale,
right?
Which that makes sense,
yeah,
right. So that's why it's difficult to have big parties, and when you wait, you forget things, and you don't want to be waiting.
Yeah.
You don't want to forget those things.
All right. So I think that that goes very well to saying, you know, how you avoid player conflicts, how to advance the plot, you know, whether it's by picking up on clues and going along with what the GM feeds you, or, you know, just by doing interesting and unexpected things that move things forward, push things in a new direction.
Do you think we should admit to our audience that we're not perfect?
No,
we should, because the last time we didn't, Ed thought he was a god and turned me into a statue.
Oh, right. Okay.
All right.
Yes.
We're not perfect.
You start.
Well, I think that we should talk about how we weren't always such great role players.
That's not true.
That we were bad, but
I do remember the first character I made was named Bill Pampas.
Yes. And do you remember where he got that name from?
Yes, I was sitting in the high school cafeteria, and there was a pumpkin somewhere, and there was a name.
Tossed Salad was the son.
No,
the other one, that was your second character, Thomas Guilford. Was the name of...
Oh, right, that was the lecture hall.
Bill Pampas was because you were looking at a pumpkin and a sign that said toss salad.
No, it was Pampas, P-A-S-S. Everyone called him Pump-Ass.
It was something like that. And it was a combination of two words.
Yeah.
And then your second character was because that Thomas Guilford was the name.
The lecture hall in our high school.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there at the lunch table making the character. I just looked up and I saw Thomas Guilford lecture hall. And I was like,
yeah.
Why not?
I still miss my monk in Chuck's game named Rance McNally.
Right. And, you know.
Names can be important, folks.
I think Ryan, one of Ryan's first characters was Michael Mallory, who was...
I was Jerry O'Connell's character from Sliders.
Anyway. I mean, everyone has their role-playing horror stories, so I think if we go over some of ours and what we would do differently, that could be good tips.
We've talked a lot about City of the Damned, my Infernalism game. As players, what would you guys have done differently to sort of avoid the, you know, tailspin of player conflict?
I wouldn't have gone to college.
I would have tried to have you guys not play when I was always at work.
I think one of the most important things we could have done is that we all took things too personally.
Yeah.
We let the conflicts around the table leave the table.
Uh-huh.
And especially with, you know, me, Meyer, and Paul's character. Like, there were times when I left and I was, like, pissed at Paul.
Yeah.
And that sort of...
I was in front of Paul for a while.
Yeah. And that sort of, I mean, I didn't get that far, but that like carried over for a while. And you can't let what goes on around the table affect anything else. You have to. It's a game.
Super important.
It doesn't. Mm-hmm. It doesn't actually matter. You know, these are great stories that everyone's telling and sharing. And that's one of the things I really love about role playing. It's like collective storytelling, but it doesn't really matter. Like you shouldn't end friendships over a game. It doesn't matter what the game is.
Leave the game at the game and don't bring in personal life.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I would say too, as the GM, I would have handled keeping secrets from you guys differently. You know, I would have made sure that the secrets stayed in the game and that the players knew everything.
Right.
Because I think you were all mature enough. Maybe most of you were mature enough to not act on out of character knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I definitely think that's that you can't, and you can't keep secrets from the GM either. Like, and I think that's something we've all learned. And I had City of the Damned, I still think, was a great chronicle.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also a great learning experience for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Of, like, what to do to increase drama, but at the same time, not letting it go too far, and what not to do.
Right.
Like, we haven't had those same problems again. And it's been years since we played that chronicle. Like, before, you know, my Eclipse Phase game right now, Meyer and Chris's characters don't get along.
Yeah.
Maybe they never will. But that stops at the table. Meyer and Chris get along fine.
Yeah. At the City of Damned, like, everyone's character didn't like everyone else's character, and we all try to fight and kill each one another.
On more than one occasion.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to kill anyone.
Yeah, well.
Will wasn't really either.
No, he tried, he didn't like Chris's character, he tried Thompson. Killing
him. Oh, yeah. That's right, he did.
Remember when they teleported him to Liberty Island?
Yes. Yes.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. However, it does sort of bring us into the players getting off the rails idea.
Well, the next thing we have slated to talk about is an infamous game that Ed ran.
Thank you for taking Ed's smooth transaction and then going
transaction.
Into the transaction. Well, no, transaction.
I have to say though, because Ed's transition didn't really get players going off the rails. Okay, that would. Well, I have to say, in our defense, we weren't really going off the rails.
We just didn't take
the bait that Ed handed.
Okay,
us.
So let's skip all the transitions. This is what happened.
And transactions.
No, never skip the transactions. I work at. Retail.
It's Black Friday. Lots of transactions are happening today. Well, it's not That's Black Friday for you listeners. It's just Black Friday for us. Anyway, it's true.
I know. Let's keep going.
What if they're listening to this in 2013?
I guess. Would it be Black Friday then?
If they're listening to it on Black
in a
Friday.
Year from now.
Oh, okay, well, I'm sorry. Then I'm not talking to you.
Unless the Mayans were right, there's going to be a Black Friday in 2013.
So... I was running a game, a mage game. This is Mage of the Ascension.
That's pretty much all we played for a
years.
Decade.
Yeah.
Yeah. Time.
Yeah.
And the whole premise of the game was, I believe it was called the Mystery Solvers or something. It was this troop of people who were specifically sent to places where sort of mysterious things were happening and
yeah, but this was unexplained. After that. This, we got away from the technocracy of
right.
the plan.
So... They had been running away from the technocracy Tekken actually destroyed their base, and their plane got destroyed, and they had to bail out. And they landed in a small town in Scotland.
In Scotland?
In Scotland. Where they discovered that there were a bunch of... A string of unexplained murders. Which I, in error, thought would be enough to get them to proceed. However, they spent most of the game trying to exit the town.
Well, you left out the key part where, when we got to the town, it was all closed off by the police. And we went up and said, "What's going on, officer?"
Right.
He said, "There's been a bunch of strange murders. Hey, you're new in town. I don't recognize you."
What did he say?
"Oi, you're new in town and I don't recognize you. You're a suspect."
We'd like to apologize to our Scottish listeners.
Nay. Anyway.
So
we got into town and the police automatically said we're suspects in these murders, which we didn't do.
Right.
So then we decided, hey, let's get the hell out of here.
I would have to say, in addition to that, you know, not wanting to stick around the town where we had just shown up and been accused of committing horrible crimes, we were also involved in a pan-global conspiracy involving the death of John F. Kennedy at the time, and people were actively trying to hunt us down and kill
right.
us. So
there was
at least to my mind, my character had other things to worry about. Even though it was sort of part of our charter, as it were, to solve this mystery, we kind of had bigger fish to fry in mind.
So for a lot of reasons, they wanted to leave the town. Now, my game was entirely based around them staying in this town and solving this murder, because I figured, you know what, we've done a lot of meta stories, you know, we've done a lot of overarching stories, let's do a one-shot. Now, they tried to leave, and now, I was 16-year-old me, instead of handling it like a mature professional, I stormed out of, I guess we have to tell them now that we used to mage in a tent.
If you're going to go that far, you should tell them that we used to have all-night gaming sessions where we do like 3 or 4 games in a row, and then just sleep in the tent.
Cool.
In my 8-person tent.
Yes. And
y'all could be jealous.
Hey, we still did that like 2 years ago. We did that.
Yeah, well, we didn't do it in the tent.
Yes, we did.
No, we just called it a tent.
No, it was my backyard. We had a tent.
You and I stayed in the tent. Everyone else left.
That was more than two years ago.
Well, we role played in the tent.
Yes.
No, it was about like 2 days.
Anyway, the point is, I stormed out of the tent.
You're getting off. So getting off.
I stormed out of the tent because I was angry, because I felt that nobody was taking my game seriously, and I felt that when you respect your GM, you stay on the rails. Now, my reaction was definitely not the reaction of a professional.
Well, and to your credit, we didn't just try to leave. We tried to leave for like 2.5
yes.
hours.
No, it definitely was not 2.
It was, but it was a long time.
It was not 2.5 hours.
Repeatedly.
In my defense, I did throw up several roadblocks, and I did sort of, it stopped being bait, and it became neon light saying, "This is the game, please go to it, for the love of God, please go to it."
Green fog.
However, we were playing our characters.
But they were playing their characters. Now, had I been a little bit more of a seasoned GM, I would have come up with a scenario, easy scenario to keep them there. Maybe there was a magical barrier that was preventing them from leaving. Maybe their mentor showed up and made them say, there's a million things I could have come up with. What I definitely shouldn't have done is taken it personally and stormed away.
But this goes to, we've all made mistakes, you know, along those lines. And I know my games used to be, back before, you know, a while ago, my games used to be very linear, and it was everyone would play, and then they would get to some insurmountable obstacle that the players had no chance of ever defeating, and then some Deus Ex Machina would do it for us, and they would just do it for them, and they would just kind of watch. My games used to suck, in my opinion. And I think I've changed a lot, because we've all been learning, and through playing and running, you know, it's all learning experiences.
And the other mistake I made was putting too much emphasis on the fact that I had to stay in the town.
Yeah, like if you had just said,
okay,
if there was no pressure on, like if we thought the town was a safe place to be,
right,
other than the murders, and we weren't It was the fact that we were on the run, and someone said, you have to stay
right
here.
Right. And had you left town, I could have created a string of murders in another town. I could have made the bad guy follow you. There's a lot I could have done.
One of the things that I would suggest that would have solved that problem, because players are notoriously selfish, you should have had the murderer attack us.
Yeah.
Because then it becomes a matter of revenge.
Right.
You could, and if I remember correctly, the murderer was a ghost.
Right, it was.
That sounds really lame. But
that was the old lady.
Yeah, it was the old lady.
Well, it was the old lady.
We almost pushed out a flight of stairs. Well,
okay, the old lady. The old lady was a verbena who had reincarnated the ghost of her daughter, who was murdered.
And one of us randomly just joked about pushing her down the stairs when we first saw her. And if we had,
so, I would say the other thing as a GM. Unless you build up to it gradually and give your players a motivation, never tell them they can never do something.
Right.
Or that they have to do something.
Yes. Right.
Because they will do the opposite.
Right.
If you tell your players, if you give them something and say, never push the red button on this
thing,
the first fucking thing they're going to do is push that goddamn button.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, and I had to earn us our explicit tag.
I would say, you know, as a character, as a player in that game, we could have done more to look for the motivation to stay in
town. You all admitted that at one point it became less about playing a character and more about screwing with me.
As it got by like the fifth roadblock
you put up in front of us. We had just decided we were going to get out of the town.
Right.
Because it was clear that you did not want us out of that town. You wanted us there solving that murder.
I could have done a better job keeping you there, or just let the story spill out outside of the town.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think one of the important things, you know, as a GM, Chuck said this in our last role-playing episode, you never want to say no to the players after the game starts. But you want to make it explicit that their actions and their decisions have consequences.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so if we don't want to stick around for that murder investigation in that little town in Scotland, you know, that's okay. But then, oh shit, we're the subject of, you know, a nationwide manhunt in Scotland.
Right.
And, you know, they've got pictures of us up at all the airports.
Exactly.
Not letting us cross the border, you know. And we have to deal with that now.
Right.
You know, and that still would have taken your game off the rails. Like, you would have...
That game wouldn't have worked.
It would have been a different game.
But from that point on, it would have been more difficult for you to do stuff.
Yeah,
at that point, you were wanted by the federal government, so I don't know how much the Scotland thing would have really mattered. But
well,
I see your point.
If you're in Scotland and you want to get out of Scotland, then...
I mean, I would say one thing I've definitely learned as a GM is that you can't make a rigid structure for your games.
Oh, yeah.
Things have to be fluid. I mean, there's very few times where you should tie something to a specific place.
Yeah.
Like, I think it worked for my Eclipse Phase game because someone was plotting to blow up the space elevator. But everything that happened around it was just in that city of Olympus. There was no one key place where you guys had to be, like, that, you know, a warehouse where they were, you know, the Barsoomians were having a meeting. Could have been anywhere, depending how the plot turned out. I know from the first game, there was something, I don't remember, there was like some contact that I expected you guys to make
and they just made completely different.
Yeah. Oh, it was the bar. I talked to the big guy and you wanted me to talk to the other
guy. Right, yeah, that was it exactly. Yeah, when we went to the bar, it was the very first game, but it was my own fault. I put two guys at the bar and Meyer talked to the other one. And it just took that first like game and a half in a completely... I mean, not a completely different direction.
I remember you saying right after the game, I should have just made the contact the other guy.
Yeah. Like, which I didn't think of. But
it's a simple switch. Like, just, oh, well, Meyer talked to the wrong guy. Okay, that's the contact now.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Right.
Yeah, like, you can't keep it so rigid.
And, Ryan, how many maps did you used to make that we just never...
Loads.
Yeah.
Loads.
How much hours did you take making those maps?
I mean, like... Honestly, since I started getting into like Call of Cthulhu and pre-made scenarios, that has bothered me less and less, because with those you never really get to everything.
No.
Yeah.
And it's sort of become, you know, I accept that there are, you know, holes that I need to fill in for myself in the story, areas that I need to plot out that you guys won't necessarily get to, or that I can, you know, sort of take off and bolt on somewhere else, or you know, just circumvent entirely.
Yeah.
Do you know what is a really important thing about role-playing, though?
What?
Doing things. Like, actually doing something.
Yeah.
That is an important thing.
Yeah. It's something that Eric knows a lot about, especially after one incident that happened.
All right. Mm. There are a couple times where I'm not as quick on the draw as I'd like to be, and I can't exactly come up with something to say. And there was this one...
And I can't exactly come up with something to say.
You know, that type of thing where you need to talk and you don't. Yes. That was mine and Will's problem in one game.
Well, to be fair, before the game started, it was me, Alex, and then you and Will.
Right.
You and Alex were a seasoned role.
This was like Will and Meyer's like first game, yes. Like one of their first games.
This was another game that I was running, and my thought, this was another Mage of the Ascension. My thought as a GM was, I'll put Meyer with Alex, because Meyer's new and Alex is old.
Experienced.
And I'll put Will with Eric, because Will is... New. Will is Will.
Will is always
Eric's
new.
Eric's just old.
Will's still new. And Eric is experienced.
I have my moments of not being able to help and not being able to do things to advance the plot. And in this particular situation, it was one of those moments where I just kind of locked up. Can you just give a quick explanation of the exact...
So Eric doesn't have words right now.
The scenario was this. They were breaking into a base, into a government facility, these four people.
Yes.
And their goal was... They had two goals, and their two goals were to go up... Because it was a building. It was like a tall building.
Most bases are buildings.
Yeah. Go up to the upper floors where there was a prison and free their allies. And to go down into the basement where there was a laboratory. That seems kind of backwards now that I say it.
Mm. Yeah.
Anyway, to go into the basement.
That's why I messed up.
Eric was just sitting there thinking, this architecture makes no sense.
To go into the basement where there was a laboratory and retrieve a scientist who had been forced to work for the bad guys because the bad guys had his girlfriend...
In the prison.
Yes.
But they had freed her.
Before, yeah.
Well, that's what we were doing.
No,
it was a game earlier.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
They had freed her from a different prison earlier.
So we were going to go up to him and say, hey, we freed your girlfriend. She's safe. You don't have to work for these guys anymore. Come with us.
And they had gone through the trouble already of infiltrating. Like, they were walking around this government facility with, like...
guard.
Cool. Yeah, we were safe, yeah.
They were like... They looked like guard. They looked like government employees. So they go... So Alex and Meyer, they went, you know what? We're going to send Eric and Alex to do the... Eric and Will to do the easy job of walking up to the guy and saying, we have your girlfriend, blah, blah, come with us. We're going to go break them out of prison because that's going to be a little bit more difficult.
So we get on the elevator to go up.
They go on the elevator, go up. Eric and Will go down.
You're not giving
names. Apparently I was doing everything.
It felt like at the end.
Yeah.
Eric and Will walk up to the scientist and say, hi, Oswald. That was the name of the scientist. And Oswald proceeds to ask them what they're doing there.
No, I could have sworn there was another scientist.
No, it was just Oswald.
It was just him.
Okay, then that's probably... I'm going to go and say that that's probably... Because I think at the time, I thought we were talking to some other scientist.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, so you thought you had to be, like, sneaky about it?
Yeah, and that's why I couldn't come up with how to sneakily say, hey, we need this guy, we need to take him this way.
So Oswald, he walked up to Oswald, and Oswald said, what do you want? And they said nothing.
Nothing. Silence.
I locked up. You know, it happens. I just couldn't come up with something for that, well, that aforementioned reason, because I thought there was...
Nobody's judging you. Don't get defensive.
Yeah, Alex and I were just staring at them like, what are
you doing? And
we were sitting on opposite sides of the table, too.
To Will's credit, he stepped forward and tried stuff that didn't really work. And Oswald said, well, what are you doing here? And Will's response was... Oswald! And then Oswald said, what? And then Will's response was, how you doing? So eventually Oswald said, okay, well, if you don't tell me why you're here, I'm going to call security. And then reached for his phone. Will grabbed his arm, and Oswald turned his arm into water.
Yes.
Cut to Alex and Meyer on the elevator
about to get off at the prison level when a bunch of guards run on and say, "Oh, there's shit going down in that laboratory."
Like, oh, okay.
Meyer, I gotta go. And ride the elevator all the way back down. That was the real victim in the story, is that Meyer and I had to listen to the damn elevator music all the way up.
Yes.
And then all the way back
down. Not as bad as that circus music, that one.
So, let's talk a little bit about
losing
your voice.
You have to be able to think on your feet, both for GMs, especially, which we talked about, and for players, too.
That's why I really don't GM as much. I'm not always as good with thinking on my feet, which is why I kind of stick away from that. But
which is fine. It's not for everyone. It's,
and as a GM, I tend to be a little bit more understanding of that. Like, if I see somebody is struggling with what to do, I'll give them a few minutes to think about it, you know, say, okay, well, we'll cut to the other group and come back to you, figure out what you're going to do, you know, and then...
Yeah. Which is definitely a way to do it. And the other way to do it, I think, is... Another way to do it, I think, is to think about not just character strengths, but as a GM, to know your player strengths, and as a party, to know your player strengths.
Right.
Yeah.
If you're going to send a group to do the, Eric is great with a plan. If you're going to send a group to do a planning, sending Eric might not be the best idea. And,
You just said Eric is great with a plan.
If there's a plan.
But doing the planning.
Oh, doing the planning. Yeah. Okay.
So, like, if there's a plan in place...
And Eric knows what he has to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are... And Meyer isn't good at... Meyer's generally not good at diplomacy, his characters.
Nope.
So, knowing your characters and your players...
Yeah.
Strengths and weaknesses. Well, we want this to go over smoothly without a hitch, so let's not send Meyer.
Right.
You know, we want this to, you know, we want this person to like us, so let's not send Ed.
Right.
My characters tend to not be too likable.
I would say something else you can do as a GM, too, is to give your players a little more information.
Right.
You know, you can feed them context, you can remind them of what their options are, you can suggest a few things. You know, like Ed, you could have said to them, well, remember, you know, he's only working for the bad guys because they have his girlfriend and you're freeing her.
We did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, at the time we did.
Okay.
I would say another thing, which I've obviously shown, is that I think sometimes it's okay to let your players fail.
Yes.
And that serves as a learning experience, and also, I think, sort of grounds the games a little bit, because sometimes, especially with something like Mage, like your players, especially, I know I've done it, like you just sort of get hopped up on everything you can do in this fictional world, and every once in a while you have to remind them that you're not God,
right?
And you can screw up.
And also, I think one of the things as a player to be aware of in games is that it's okay to throw a punch instead of a fireball. You know, it's okay. Sometimes I think, especially in a game like Mage, you forget that you can do things mundanely.
Right. You don't always have to whip out your bazooka. You can, you know, unlock the door with a credit card.
There's a Marvel comic where an issue of Doctor Strange where Baron Mordo throws an anti-magic field over the castle or wherever, and Doctor Strange is like, well, I can still punch you. And that's how he beats him, because Baron Mordo now can't do magic either. So that's, you know, just, I think that's really important to remember, is that there are mundane ways to do things.
Yeah. Right.
And even though Eric and Will failed, that game made me and Alex and I characters friends.
Yep. Yeah.
Although I have to admit,
the plan.
I think I purposefully quickly chose to go with Meyer because I didn't want to get stuck with Will.
Well, and I remember after that game, I had missed it for some reason. I think I had something else to do that night. And Ed called me up, and the first thing that he said to me was, "Damn you for missing that game."
But, you know, speaking of not wanting to get stuck with Will, I think we have a surprise. We have a little treat for you guys when we get
coming
back.
Coming up, yes. We're going to share with you some Will stories, and we're going to have Will here to defend his actions.
Yeah.
During his
choices. One screws up more than Will, though.
All that after the break.
We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
everybody, and welcome back to Ragnarok.
Oh.
I know, it's very sad. While you guys were listening to that song, we lost Eric to the murderers.
Wait, that's why you're crying? I'm crying because I got hit in the nuts by the murderers.
No, I'm crying because this is a new carpet and now I have Eric blood all over it.
It smells like...
It's never going to come out.
It smells like the yellow bastard from Sin City blood.
Oh, God.
It's terrible. Meyer, we'll get some bleach. You know, we'll go to town on the Eric blood. And we'll,
oh, come on, it's a blue carpet. We can't bleach it.
Stupid murderers.
But, right, I'll figure it out.
One brony down.
Yeah, well, where'd you come here, Will? When did you get here?
Did you come with the murderers?
No, you guys kidnapped me again.
What? Yeah.
Oh, right. Wait, so what were you doing for the whole first segment? Were you just like...
We had him in the closet.
Oh.
Again.
That's
tied up.
I invested in a
really ball
good,
gag.
Yeah, I invested in a really good ball gag this time. So
how'd you get out?
Ryan let me out.
Ryan, why'd you let him out?
Well, because we need him for this segment.
All right. Okay.
Speaking of which, what we are going to do now, we told a whole bunch of stories... in the last segment.
Some of them were already about Will.
But in this segment, we are going to share some of our favorite Will anecdotes. And Will is going to have a chance to respond to what we say. And, you know, maybe we'll interview him a little bit about what the fuck was going on in his head when these things happened. I believe, Ed, you had the first Will
yes.
anecdote.
Now, I believe this was very early on in Will's career.
Yes.
Not that much has changed.
No.
But we were playing in, I feel like this is all we're talking about, Mage of the Ascension. Most of these they're all about Mage of the Ascension.
Yep.
This was in Alex's, which we actually haven't talked about your game, really.
Yeah, it was a chronicle I ran. I don't remember what it was called, but the basic premise was that...
It was the parallel world one.
It was a parallel universe, and magic was everywhere, so there wasn't paradox and everything. But all the crazy people, all the marauders, were sent to Australia. It was a prison colony again. And the basic premise of this was that everyone had to find this one mage who was sent there. And they were explicitly told, he'll help you, but you can't shatter his quiet, his image of things.
Can I tell the story?
No.
Okay. So, like Alex said, we couldn't shatter his you know, delusions, which is generally a good idea if you're in somebody crazy, even if he doesn't have super magic powers.
Which this guy did,
exactly. And, we were also, I believe, explicitly told that his delusion was that he was... In New York City.
Yes.
So, we approach him. Myself, I'm playing Yao Yan, who is a 7 foot in each direction, you know, basically dynastic warrior with a huge axe. And Will, I don't remember the character Will was playing.
He was playing the shop teacher.
Oh, right, he was playing the shop teacher.
It was my first character.
Had a nail gun.
And a hammer. All his weapons were tools.
So, it was Tim Allen and Zuzu from Dynasty Warriors.
And Ryan was there, and Meyer
right.
was too.
Yeah, I was playing...
I wasn't there.
You weren't?
No.
I was playing a 14-year-old mage.
Yeah, you were, because you got Shredder's helmet.
Were you the crazy guy, or were you the...
No, I wasn't playing that guy yet.
Okay. So, we walk up to this mage, and he's, you know, step into my office, or whatever, however he introduced us, you know, welcomed us into his delusion. And he's like, oh, you know, I hope you didn't have a hard time catching a cab. And Will goes, what do you mean a cab? It's like, what are you talking about? And the guy's like, you know, like, it's pretty far, you know, I hope you didn't walk, and, you know, there's not really a subway around, maybe you took a cab. What are you talking about? It's like a jungle out there. Yeah, and then Ryan chips in, and goes, the concrete jungle! And I was like, I don't mean the concrete jungle, I mean it's like a jungle, it's like Australia out there. What are you talking about, man? This is New York City. No, it's not, it's Australia.
Yeah.
At which point, my character throws his hand over...
Well, no, because that broke the yes. insane mage's, you know, quiet, and he was a mind mage, so...
Well, I was getting there.
Oh, okay.
Because even before I knew the guy was breaking,
I just decide, you know what, I'm going to shut Will up, and I lifted him up over my head, threw my hand over his mouth, and started to run. But not fast enough, because the Mind Mage erased Will's memory of middle school.
Yeah, and the fact that he was a mage.
Yeah.
So Will went back to sleep for a little while.
Yep.
So Will, what do you have to say to that? How do you respond to the fact that you completely did the opposite of what Alex said for us to do?
And I'm pretty sure I made it pretty explicit too, right?
And missed all the mind-bogglingly obvious, heavy-handed hints.
Yeah, that was bad.
That's gonna be every rebuttal, I think.
Oh my! What was your reasoning? I don't really have one.
Did you learn from the experience?
I definitely learned from the experience.
I learned
to listen a little bit more in the games, even though every once in a while that tends to happen where I just go in my own little world sometimes. daydream.
What's in your own little? Describe a daydream for us.
I can't even.
I just can try. Like, where do you go?
I don't know.
No, you know?
No, I don't remember.
Such a disturbing answer. Where do you go when you daydream?
I don't know.
Space in between spaces.
So what would you do differently now, Will?
I would keep my mouth shut.
Okay.
Good answer.
No, that was just me just not listening, and I didn't listen to you, and I wasn't catching the hint. So, yeah. That was just... Like, I didn't realize that we were within the same mage.
Were you in your space between spaces while we were dropping our hints, too?
No, I just wasn't getting your hints.
So the lesson that our listeners can take from this is pay attention to what's going on in the game and try not to be so slow on the uptake that you miss all of the hints that your fellow players are giving.
Yeah.
At least they weren't as heavy-handed as the time when we dropped his hat in the deep freezer.
Yeah.
I literally screamed at you, your hat is in the deep freezer, right, and you said,
let's
what
put
you
this
mean?
Way. Don't hint at me anymore, okay?
Okay.
Right. Well, I think my story doesn't involve hints. It's pretty explicit.
Good job.
Wow. Oh, sorry.
Even I return turn off my phone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you going to shame me on air right now?
Yeah, we are.
Because it causes interference in the mic.
It causes interference in your asshole.
Ooh. Wow.
Speaking of explicit.
if you guys would like to leave Ed some public shame, you can comment on our website or email us.
You know, I feel like we've often asked our listeners to leave Ed public shame, and they never do.
Let's say they like him for some reason.
I know. It's weird.
They like you too.
It's because they don't have to sit here with him.
That's true.
Maybe they're just afraid because they don't want to turn me into a vengeful god again.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah.
Oh, I did have to slay you.
Very upsetting. Yeah. So, Alex, you had a story.
So, this one is from City of the Damned. And I have to say, this is probably one of my most favorite role-playing stories ever. Now, the backstory. The backstory.
We hinted at this earlier.
Yeah.
And then we yelled at you and told you not to give it away.
Yes. This was Ryan's Infernalism game. And then before I started playing a demon, I took over an NPC that Ryan created named Keith Haskins. And everyone hated Keith Haskins because he was a jerk before I even showed up.
I believe we decided that Keith Haskins was played by John Glover from Smallville.
Yes. And Keith Haskins was a jerk, and I played it up. So it all came to a head. And I don't remember why, but everyone decided to kill Keith Haskins. So there was one
because he was a dick.
Yeah.
I think we thought you stole the baby, didn't we?
Yes, everyone thought I kidnapped Will's child, which I didn't. But anyway, so there
was really Ed.
Yes. Yeah. So there was a big climactic chase scene where I actually got away from everyone and escaped. Yeah. So this story was the next game. The next game, Keith Haskins runs to his safe house because he had prepared for this, you know, this contingency, and he was injured. So I went to give myself a medicine check, and I triple botched.
Well, you have to also say, Alex and I got together a little while before the game, and I asked him, you know, okay, well, what kind of, safety installments would you have in place? What kind of security do you have?
Right.
How are you going to keep these guys from completely killing you? And we came up with this whole elaborate setup.
Yeah.
You know, it was supposed to be a big boss battle.
Right.
And I said to him, you know, please don't feel bad if your character dies because he's just an NPC.
Yeah. So I ran back to my safe house, did my medicine check, triple botched, and wound up overdosing on morphine and knocking myself unconscious, leaving me completely defenseless. Utterly and completely defenseless. Mm-hmm. So while that was going on, Meyer and Chris had just sold parts of their souls for crazy demon powers.
Mm-hmm.
And one of Chris's demon powers was Berserker Rage. So whenever he wanted or didn't want to, he would fly into a crazy, unstoppable Berserker Rage.
I believe the rule in the book was that if you wanted to avoid flying off the handle at the slightest provocation, you had to make a willpower check.
Which I think Chris rarely Chris decided really to make.
Yeah.
And to be fair, Chris's character is already an angry guy.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And basically, a little bit more background, Will had missed the last couple of games, and Ed was playing Will's doppelganger, who was trying to ruin his life.
Right. So he was impersonating Will.
Right.
So to get Will out of the picture, Ed's character had knocked him unconscious and boarded him up in a wall.
Yep.
So as Chris is walking out of the office, or while Chris is in the office selling his soul to the demon, Meyer hears a thumping in the wall. They break it open, and it's Will. And they pull him out. And so they're like, oh, Frank. Will's character was Frank, and Meyer's character and Will's character were best friends.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, Frank, what were you doing in the wall? They start talking. Chris walks out. And in the game before, quote-unquote Frank, who was really Ed, had attacked Chris.
Yeah.
So Chris, the really angry guy, walks out and sees Frank standing there and goes to attack him. And Frank was a correspondence mage, which means he would teleport things a lot. So his response to Chris attacking him was to...
Wait, let's say what his response was not first. His response was not, hey, I wasn't the one who attacked you.
Right.
His response was not, Frank, tell him I wasn't the one who attacked you.
Yeah.
His response was not, I've been boarded up in this room for the past day.
Right.
It was...
to teleport Chris to Liberty Island. And when Chris got there, he went into his new Berserker Rage. I think this is the first time Chris went into a Berserker Rage, too. Yes.
He swam back to Manhattan Island, stole a taxi cab, and drove it into the lobby of the hotel where you guys were.
Didn't you say, Chris, do you want to roll? And he said...
No.
No, yeah. And this created so much infighting between the other characters. And then Chris went and kidnapped Will's family. So Meyer tried to protect them and turned into his demon form and started fighting Chris.
No, I went from the floor under him. I just reached up and ripped him down.
And it caused so much. They spent the whole... I literally did nothing this entire game. I just sat there and watched while they fought amongst themselves. And I got away because of all this infighting that Will started. So thank you for that, Will. And what did you have to say to that?
Oh, I did it on purpose. I wanted to create...
Well, drama. My character actually had a temper. And he doesn't take shit from anybody. So when somebody's charging at him about to attack him, he's not going to sit by lightly. He's not going to, like, take it or tell him, oh. No, he's going to fight back. So that's kind of what I did. And I figured that if I teleport him...
Kind of, yeah.
Well, and I have to say, that does kind of go along with Will's character, because Frank was a family man. He had a family of four, I think.
Had a
family of four.
No, more.
With two on the way, because you had twins. Your wife had twins. And he was an entertainment manager and an alcoholic. So bad decisions were kind of in his character a little bit.
Yeah. That's a disappointingly lucid answer, Will.
No.
So
would there be anything you'd change then? Like now?
If you were doing it now, would you do anything different?
Yes and no. I mean, like, it turns out to be pretty entertaining
the
entire time, so... I've never
done so little
how,
in a game.
How would
so
you,
fun.
As Will, react if a gigantic black man was charging
you? Oh, I would probably...
And you had the power to teleport him to Ellis Island.
Well, my first reaction would be, whoa, I've been inside the wall for, like, this long. I would have done that. Not, you know, teleport and, like, send somebody to an island. I would try to figure out, like, why this guy wants to attack me.
But, right. Or send him to an island further away.
Right.
Chris was then scared of me because he realized I could teleport him to the moon.
No, he wasn't scared.
No,
actually, he told me, actually, out of game, like, I was actually really afraid you were going to kill my character. He said my correspondence magic was just much stronger than
Chris.
His.
Chris might may have been
right,
a little
but Thompson,
his character Thompson, was not.
No.
So Meyer.
Yeah, Well, my favorite story.
Chris never
was this the first game, or was one of the? It was one of the very first.
It was one of the very first games of Alex's game with Juan Maria Jose Estrada.
That was Ed's game.
Oh yeah,
I love that character.
And Will played like a hacker character. And it was one. I think it was Will's first game. It wasn't my first game of the game, but it was Will's first game.
I don't
think,
no, because his first character was the shop teacher that he used in my game and Ed's game.
No, for his character, but that character was his first game.
Yeah.
It was his character's first game.
Oh, that character's first
game. Yes. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Not Will's first game.
Yeah, no. It wasn't Will's, but it was his character's first game. It was maybe one of Will's first games, though, he's played.
Yeah, it was like game like two or three.
It was
or
early
something.
On, yeah.
And Ed's talking and stuff, and all of a sudden Will goes, "And that should do it." And I turn him like, "What'd you do?"
And he's pantomiming using a keyboard, laptop. Yeah.
And I was like, "Will, what did you just do?" He goes, "Well, I went on a computer and I look up all the bad guys, so I know all the bad guys now." And I'm like, "No, you don't, Will, because you didn't know anything. You know nothing right now. You just said that should do it."
I thought it was a door.
You have to actually make a roll.
Wait, what? You thought what was a door?
I thought like I was just going to open a door.
No. He's right.
He was. You guys were trying to break out of prison.
The other thing, the thing you're thinking of was he was sitting there going, "That's interesting."
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, it's the same thing.
Yeah. That's interesting. What's interesting? Well, I just looked the guy up.
Like, no, really, you have to make a roll for it.
And then that should do it, like, broke the side, because we're sitting there, and he's like, "All right, so we're going to hack the door. And that should do it."
And then we're like, "Will, you didn't do anything. You didn't make a roll. We're still there."
"No, I opened the door."
Like, "No, you have to roll. You got to tell Ed that you're going to open the door."
You can't just say you opened the door.
You want my rebuttal on this already?
No, but it was so funny that at the end of the game, I was bad. Juan Ramirez Estrada went evil. He became a demon, and he killed Will's character, and he said, "And that should do it." And I turned his blood into fire.
So, what is your rebuttal, Will?
My rebuttal on that? I was a beginner. I didn't understand the whole concept of the role-playing yet.
Okay.
Yeah, but I guess we said it wasn't your first game.
You have to admit, though, it did take you quite a while to
get the mechanics.
Especially Arete.
Guys, so I roll my prime plus Arete, right?
No, just your Arete, Will.
Why don't I add my prime to it?
Because you don't, Will. You just roll your Arete.
And what's initiative again?
That's the order. Oh, just so you, whoever's listening, a fourth ed mage, you do add your Arete to your
spear. Oh, yeah.
But we were playing second ed, where you just roll your Arete.
Well, we should play fourth ed mage and just confuse Will.
I have the book. I'm not a big fan of fourth ed mage. Anyway.
All right, this next one is
my story a gem. My story goes back to City of the Damned. And as I said before, he was a talent agent, a family man. And he was a celestial choruser and an alcoholic. A celestial chorus, for those of you who don't know mage, they believe that they channel their true magic from God. So his faith in God allowed him to work his will on the world.
Don't they call it the One?
Yeah. They're all-inclusive, religious-neutral kind of a...
They're Unitarians.
Deity, yeah. So...
My best character.
As I said,
he's like your first real character.
Yeah, it's my first really good character.
Yeah, it was like my first real character. It was a game with a lot of everyone's like a lot of.
We talked a lot about this game a little bit earlier.
Will had this really kind of a nuanced character because he was always trying to walk that line between doing right for his family and his incredibly self-destructive impulses that eventually manifested in Ed's character, his doppelganger, who wanted to destroy his life.
Oh, paradox.
So while Charles Doppler was trying to make Will go down the self-destructive path, Peter Petrelli was trying to
keep him on the straight and narrow.
Right.
And fuck his wife.
Well, and one of the major themes of the game was, how much of your soul do you trade away before you, stop being who you are, who you want to be, and start being somebody else's puppet. And since Will and the gang were working for a demon, I decided that they all had sort of a demonic taint, and they needed to retrieve the corpse of Will's child from the crypt of the body. Church.
Because we had it sold.
Right,
that's why Keith Haskins died. Never mind.
You wanted to reanimate the child's body. You had it. You found its soul. You needed its body back. And the priest, who had been warned that they were coming, he wasn't a mage himself, but he had true faith. So he prayed to God to protect the church from those who would do it harm. And when Will's character showed up, you know, since he was a celestial chorister, he obviously had a holy symbol. He had a crucifix around his neck that he always wore.
And a fanny pack.
And he walked into the church, and I told him that his crucifix started to glow white hot and you know, was burning him. And leading up to this, Will had had a falling out with his wife. Somebody had murdered his unborn children. There was just like a whole slew of
The audience can't see you waving it.
All right.
Someone had murdered his own unborn child. There was a whole slew of things that would make somebody question their faith. And Will's response when I told him that the crucifix was, you know, glowing and burning him was to tear it off his neck and hurl it across the room.
Yeah.
And at that moment, everybody at the table just went silent because, you know, we were thinking to ourselves, this was the last straw for this character. He's lost his faith in God. You know, his life is...
This is a beautiful moment. Yeah. This is a powerful...
Well, not beautiful.
Well, this is a powerful... Well, beautiful in the cinematic sense.
Yes.
It's a powerful moment.
And we were all like, damn.
Yeah. And Will just goes, what? It was burning me. So I took it off. And we all just kind of went, oh. So, Will, I have to ask you, you know, what made you choose, instead of giving your character a powerful, you know, new element to his own personal conflict, what made you choose to instead play it off as it was just a reflex response?
We kind of did dive in deeper on that, if I remember correctly. It was just that I didn't want to show weakness in front of you guys at the time. It was burning. Like, I took it off, but I really was mad. Like, I was mad that, like, my faith was questioned. My character was mad at that. And I do remember diving into that at some point.
Right, but we're saying that why did you, as Will, say to us as players, wasn't didn't mean anything. My cross is burning. You as Will weren't comfortable showing weakness in front of us as us as players. You wanted to be man in front of us, Will.
Yeah.
When I think Will, like a manly man.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay. So, would you do anything differently now?
Yeah, I probably would. Because I do remember that whole incident, and I would probably go deeper and lose the faith in everything.
Guys, it's your fault for thinking I'm that deep.
Yeah. So not to count on him for that.
I feel like the we should tell one more story in honor of... Because Eric and Chris really love this story.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good one.
So in honor of them, we'll tell the story about the train.
Right. that was your game, so why don't you take it away.
So I was running a game. You don't need to know the details, but it took place on a train where there was a murder. Mm-hmm. And what had happened was they were in a tunnel, and I believe a bomb went off. No, the bomb hadn't. There was a bomb on the train.
Right. Yeah.
But the train stopped in the middle of the tunnel, and the tunnel was like miles and miles wide. So Will was playing a musician who had a gig to go to in the city the train was on its way to, and the train was stopped. And
for once, we were being good players.
Yes.
And actually taking the bait about exactly. Trying to, you know, figure out what was going on. Although I think the bomb was a good motivation for that.
Yeah.
Wasn't the train, though, was it in the tunnel?
It was in the tunnel.
Yeah.
And Will, this was Will's first game in this...
Yes.
In this,
this was definitely not his first game.
Right, it was not his first game. This was his first game.
I barely remember this game.
This was his first game in this...
But Will had played many games before this.
In this chronicle. And he was playing, I believe your character was a knockoff of Jack Black from School of Rock.
That's right.
And he was on his way to a gig, and he had his guitar with him. So the train had a bomb on it, and there was a murder to be solved. And they were literally, like, hundreds plus miles away from the city where Will had his gig.
Trapped in this tunnel.
Trapped in this tunnel. And Will's like, all right, so what do you guys do? Will, and everyone's like, all right, well, I guess, you know, I'm going to start looking for clues. Will goes, I'm going to go and get off the train and start working my gig. I'm like, Will, it's hundreds of miles away, and you're in a pitch-dark tunnel that is, like, maybe 10 miles long. Well, you know, I got to get to my gig.
So I'll start walking.
Oh, okay, well, you get, you know, a couple of feet, and you can't see at all, and you hear some noises. And
no, not even that. The door wouldn't open.
Oh, right, the door, yeah, well, the door won't open. All right, I'll stand by the door and wait for it to open. Okay. So what do the rest of you do? And then we got back to the game, and I think eventually Will joined in.
Yeah, but for most of the game, Will stood by the door waiting for it to open.
Yes.
Or waiting for the train to start moving again.
Mm-hmm. Will? You can't use your beginner...
Yeah, this wasn't a newbie mistake this time.
I think I want to get through this to laziness.
That's an honest answer.
I guess I wasn't feeling it with the character.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't really, I really wasn't into the game that much. So.
Ouch.
Wow.
Well, this section of the game. The rest of the game I thought was much better.
I think that was the only game you played.
Yeah. That one?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that. I just wasn't. I told you I don't remember it that well. But so I'm pretty
sure.
I don't
know if that's true.
So, in short, it was your fault. Then.
So the 30 seconds of intro that I gave you guys, Will wasn't feeling.
No.
Don't like it.
I'm not feeling immersed. I'm not being taken away to a magical world.
I just didn't like. I
still feel.
Ironically, I don't like my character that much.
You made him.
Yeah, but I made him. I was like, oh, he's stupid.
You know, I'm going to agree with you, Will, because I'm pretty sure your character's main weapon was his guitar.
Yeah,
because it was also an axe.
Yeah, exactly.
Your axe was an axe.
It was a guitar. It was a guitar that had axe blades.
Yeah.
So yes, he was stupid.
Yeah. He was so terrible. He was a terrible character.
I think I realized that he was as terrible as the woodshop teacher. So I was like, I'm not really interested.
Tim Allen? What was wrong with Tim Allen?
It was just terrible.
Hey, he crucified a guy.
He did.
Yeah.
I did help crucify a guy. That was awesome.
So what would you do differently now, then?
Participate. Better character.
Answer. Good answer. So what you would do differently is something.
Yeah.
You would actually do something.
Yeah. Something useful, not just standing by the door.
You could have done anything. It would have been better than standing by the door. Right,
well, thank you, Will, for listening to us air our grievances about your role playing.
Thank you.
If any of you listeners out there have questions for Will, or if you want to share your own stories about your own group's version of Will, God help you, you have one of those.
Or if you want to share your favorite Will stories from our APs.
Yeah, there are some good ones on there.
You can you can comment on our website. You can email us at info@ragnarodrock.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 516-362-6373. Or 516-362-NERD.
I get that now.
Yeah.
If you want Will's personal cell... No.
We can give you Will's personal cell phone number.
It's going to cost you $15.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you
guys can send the $15...
We should put a donate thing on Ragnarok, and if somebody donates $15,
they get Will's phone.
They get Will's personal cell number.
If we ever start a Ragnarok Kickstarter for something, that's going to be one of our prizes for donating.
Will's personal cell number.
Will, just friendship with Will.
You get to be Will's friend.
No. Will being Will's friend is $25.
Yeah.
What about a Will cuddle?
Ooh, that's like $100.
Yeah, that's expensive.
Yeah, those
mostly because we'd have
easy.
To give most of that to Will. And
Will hug is 30.
Ooh. Oh, wow. All right. I want to do this Kickstarter just so I can get the prize.
Yeah. I'll donate $30.
Well, if I give you $30, can I get a hug?
Yes.
Ooh.
See, Will is like the anti-murderers.
It's true. Yeah.
No.
We should send Will against the murderers and have him give them all hugs. All
right.
No.
But
No, I won't be fine.
All right, well, get ready.
They killed Eric with
Ryan, why don't you take us out while we prepare Will to go see the murderers?
All right, yeah. Well, hang on, because we still haven't mentioned that you can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Okay,
go get Will.
All right, here you go.
No!
Should we grease him up?
Yeah. So, guys, I'm Ed.
I'm Meyer.
I'm Alex.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm about to die.
Yeah. I've got a bucket full of lube. Here we go. All right, Will, stay still. We're going to strip you, lube you up, and then push you out.
No, stop.
And this has been